Good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 15th of September. Very nice to have you with us, and we are happy that you are. We have a lot to talk about this morning, and we will do so with our wonderful panel. Let me introduce them to you right now. They're looking great. They're looking very effervescent.
Brightly colored.
Yes, brightly colored. And I think in the new studio and the new lights, because I don't, the studio before, there was a darker foam on the wall.
It was.
And so it gave the whole room a darker.
What will that mean to our discussion,
A little cave-like. So now there is a much lighter color foam on, and it just seems to brighten up the whole mood of the place.
So yeah, I guess we'll be cheery and chirpy during discussing migrants and Donald Trump. Great.
So as you can tell, Mike Spain is here. He is the Times Union Associate Editor. Also, University at Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. And WAMC's Alan Chartok is back. We missed you yesterday, Alan.
Yeah, well,
Happy New Year.
It's very nice of you to say. We sat in the temple and, you know, prayed and hoped for some deliverance. You know what I mean?
One can only hope.
There's a list of all the sins that they repeat. The sin of arrogance, the sin of this, the sin of that. And I'll tell you, you sit there and you say, oh, maybe I didn't do too well on that one.
It's like a checklist. Right. Yeah. Oh, that was, no, really? That one? Oh.
Sort of.
That was really unnaturally self-deprecating of Alan.
You're starting already?
Yes, Alan, you're back. Get
but
ready.
This is a week. You're not supposed to be mean to anybody.
You're not supposed to be mean? Oh, I'm so glad I'm not Jewish and you are, because then that gives me an advantage.
Well, you have until next Wednesday, right?
Yes, but here's the thing. We're you know, as you know, Jesus was Jewish. You knew that. And so therefore,
I've heard that.
Therefore, in a way, you certainly are Jewish. And you better watch out. That's all I'm going to say on the matter.
Okay. All right.
Let's go from religion to politics.
Yes, because religion has always worked so well for us in the past. All right. So we've introduced everybody. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to be a part of our group. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and you can be in on the discussion as well. And hey, don't you want to be? Let's start off today with these topics as I bring them up here. First of all, is the Hillary Clinton poll, which I find.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm groaning because I just knew that was going to come up when I saw it, and then of course it's the first one.
Well, it's a story. Of course, it's a Washington Post poll, so Washington Post has it all over their mm-hmm. newspaper. And yeah. what this poll shows is that Hillary Clinton is losing support among women.
And by the way, there's a New York Times poll that is out today, which shows, I believe, the same thing.
Eroding sharply among Democratic women, and the numbers are, I think, fairly startling. 71% of Democratic-leaning female voters said in July that they expected to vote for Hillary Clinton. Now 42% do. Oof. I mean, that's...
That's wicked.
It's all about momentum, isn't it? I mean, it seems like it just keeps piling on, and it gets people begin to, in their own mind, say, "Well, is this going to work? Do we have to go somewhere else?" And and the polls reflect that.
Right. And Dr. Carson, for example, we're going to talk about this, I'm sure, but Dr. Carson is now
eclipsed,
right up there with Trump.
Yeah.
Who would have thunk it?
Yep.
So, on the Democratic side, what do you make of the numbers?
Well, I
know you've been outspoken about the polls in general.
I have. Once again, these are really, really early polls, and they will change. You also have to look at, we're talking about momentum. Back when the first polls were taken, the ones you're making the comparisons to, there was no opposition. Bernie Sanders had not gotten started. Biden was far less a possible contender than he is now, a possible contender. And so Hillary was the only game in town. She was a formidable, because she had let's give her credit for that, too. She was a good enough politician that she basically scared away a lot of the opposition. Okay, now she's running into opposition. She is still the overwhelming favorite in the Democratic Party. And the other thing that makes me very nervous about this is the momentum that we have going, which is a poll comes out and then the press says, oh, this is, what did we say? This is alarming. This is startling. Oh, she's losing. And then it hurts even more when, in fact,
30 points.
What? But
30 points.
But in light of what I just said, you didn't even hear that. You just heard 30%.
No, I understand.
But she had no opponent. Now she does have opponent. So that's one thing. It also is a warning sign because it's so early. She can make changes.
But
now.
She's losing support among women in the poll.
Well, and here's my next point, which is that this is what always happens in feminist movement and in the Democratic Party, where we divide and separate. And the worst thing is that they're saying people of my generation like Hillary. People, younger women, don't, because they don't see her as the same icon. It's just not simply true. It's that is just talk. And I think Hillary needs to address this. She's crazy if she's going to sit here and say the same thing I am, which is, it doesn't mean all that much, relax. She should not be saying that. But that's what I think.
What should she say?
She should be saying, okay, we need to start talking to women. We need to start talking to everybody. Why is Bernie Sanders going so far ahead of me?
Who do you attribute that problem to?
Her horrible, horrible, I've said this consistently, communication staff, which let the email crisis go on and on. That is a nothing crisis.
Inside,
if she loses because of that, I'm just going to go crazy.
Inside stories that have been written about her campaign is that her campaign is afraid to confront her when they disagree with her. And perhaps these calls are being really made by her.
And they kept on saying, and just to jump on what Mike said, that because I've heard the same story and probably read the same article, but also that everything that I have read echoes the campaign of 8 years ago, meaning that many of the mistakes that were made
are being repeated. Yeah. That's a disappointment to me, that she seems not to have learned from 2008. On the other hand, some of this insidious stuff in the back, there's a big old piece of misogyny involved here. The same thing that Barack Obama has dealt with in racism, we are dealing with misogyny. Oh, the woman who won't listen to anybody else. Oh, come on. She's married to Bill Clinton. She knows all about listening to men and dealing with them. It's just not true.
Oh, as Horshack would say. I want you to know that I think that this has to do with Hillary's appeal one-to-one with people. I don't think it's misogyny, because I think that there are a lot of people that, well, there may, oh, I'm sorry, Rosemary, there will be some where it is, no question. But I don't think that's really the problem. I think the problem is that there is an individual. People have to relate to that individual. She doesn't show them the side of herself, which I know because I've interviewed her, which is a much more positive, cheery side.
She's
than a sort of droll, gargoyle-ish, not physical gargoyle, but, you know, emotionally way of seeing her. So I think it has to do with people not particularly liking what they are hearing from her. With Bernie, he goes down to an evangelical.
That was very interesting that he did that.
Well, it was wonderful. You're talking about
Liberty University.
He went to Liberty University talking to an audience purely not his own.
And he walks in there.
It was pretty good.
And they interview all of the Times interviews all the people afterwards. And they say, well, we don't believe him on birth control, but we like the fact that he came here, that he talked to us, and basically that he has a very Christian
giving
approach.
To the poor and
yes,
taking care of people,
you know,
and
cites from the various places in the Bible. I think
he quoted Saint Matthew in the New Testament.
Yeah,
but you know what was remarkable about that was it was intended. You know, that yesterday also was a big rally. It got a lot of news coverage of Donald Trump in Dallas, where he would just sort of build the rhetoric and people would cheer. What Bernie Sanders did was he went to where he wasn't necessarily welcome, where he was
in a
he was in a crowd that wasn't automatically predisposed to him, in fact arguably very predisposed against him, and he tried to talk about common ground, and that's a really important step.
It's a leadership step.
It really is. Yes, yeah. I agree.
I wish Libby were here. I'm getting, because I do approve of that. I think it was really quite remarkable. I read all the stories and looked on it online about it, about Bernie Sanders, because I think it was great. But I don't want to just. It's not that Hillary doesn't do the same things, and Libby would be here arguing.
Do you think
some
Libby would go to
things.
Liberty University? Hillary would go to Liberty University. Would Libby? That's another question.
But. I want to speak for Libby, but I doubt Libby would go to Liberty University.
I would
University.
Like to see that. I would so really
pay
like
for
to
that
see
ticket.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
That I'd fly down with her for that. That'd be cool.
But Hillary Clinton, do you think that if she's invited there, she would go there?
I think she would go because, you know, there's no way she could politically say no to it. But on the other hand, I don't think she would have been received as well.
Well, one doesn't know because one was.
Yeah,
because
it's not.
It didn't
well,
happen.
He's a Jewish socialist.
From Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn, who goes to Liberty University. That's a pretty remarkable, you know, I think Ted Kennedy used to meet Jerry Falwell,
sure.
Try and meet him halfway. You know, I mean, there's always historic attempts for people on opposite ends to try to find common ground.
We like courage. We like leadership. We don't like the same old, same old. And I think that's where Hillary has to distinguish herself. Because if she doesn't say, these are the things, these are the places I'm going to lead you, then she loses. And once you've lost, you've lost. I look at some of the failed Republican candidates from the last time around. You know, they had their shot, and then they lost.
Mm-hmm. And Hillary actually does have policies and statements that she has offered on many of these issues, many of them. But that's not what people are looking at. They're looking at this personality thing, which is so strange.
Don't you think? I'm sorry.
Molly Ivins used to always talk about what is it about Hillary Clinton? She's a Lutheran church do-gooder. She's a do-gooder lady. Why does she inspire, you know, this sort of, she's not honest, I don't trust her. I think a lot of it comes off on Bill. Bill was like Teflon. And
well, they
all
were
the bad
together.
Stuff, they
Come on,
sort
Rosemary.
Of,
they
yeah,
were
they
together.
Were. Absolutely. In fact, I think that's one of the pluses of voting for her.
They were together on Whitewater. They were
another nothing that never led to any kind of charges. It's just these vague
well,
charges.
Well, it's
that
the
go
parsing. It's the parsing of language. It's the sort of legal advice way to describe things that I think hurts her. And I agree. If she was in a one-to-one situation where she is warm and she's funny and she's glib and she's very, very bright in these when she speaks
right.
to small
she
groups.
Is.
That does not come across when she's on these big in these big crowds.
Because she's so guarded.
Yeah, that's
I
unfortunate.
That's
she's unable to, so far, break from that.
Her best performance in 2008 was when they asked her a question and she was
cried.
Doing poorly and she cried. I mean, which is not leadership. It's not, but it was real. And that was the one time we got to see her.
I want to mention the T word for 1 second in this whole thing, if I may, Joe. And that is what was fascinating to me in this poll that we're now seeing the results of, the Times, the Washington Post, is the demographic split between the people in the Republican Party who are supporting Trump and American people who are supporting Trump and those who are not. And when we take a look at who they are, it's the people with college educations who are not supporting him in the same way that the rest of the folks are. And the people in the lower middle and lower middle class are. I find that interesting.
Did you see the Adam Gottlieb? Am I saying his name
Adam
right?
Adam Gopnik.
Gopnik,
yeah.
Right.
From
in
the
New
Yorker.
York. Did you see his article about Trump yesterday?
Yes.
Fascinating. He traces the real start of Trump's campaign, his desire to go get it, from the White House Correspondents' Dinner 2 years ago, which was the first time that Obama in public humiliated Trump. Remember, he was one of the birthers, and Obama had gone to Hawaii and had gotten the real birth certificate, not a copy, and he just laid him out.
Yeah.
And Gopnik describes him sitting there, not with the usual, I can take it, glib look that most men have in public, you know, public men, but he was sitting there glowering, looking straight ahead,
well,
his jaw set.
Caught. He was caught for being stupid.
And he was humiliated and shamed in public, Alan. And that's what he's doing now. He's speaking up for all these frustrated, angry people. Hmm. So, fascinating story.
Others have done that in history and been very successful at it.
When I just want to get back to Hillary Clinton. So at what point because it seems to me there has to be more than, I'm sorry and I'm going to be nicer to people.
What do you think there has to be?
Well, I mean, you can say that, but then you actually have to do it.
Well, so, Joe, are you saying there has to be a personality
transplant? Well, I mean, right. I mean, in the last week they said—
a restart of the campaign, perhaps, or readjust. A major course correction.
Well, there is something to be said about she is who she is. In other words, it's so easy to say.
Yeah. I mean, she is who she is, so we can come up with all these reasons of why people don't connect with her, but the problem is people aren't connecting with her. So what do you do about that? Or do you just say they're not going to connect with her?
Well, I love Obama, I'll tell you. But there wasn't a lot to attach to when he decided to run for office. He was a very decent guy, it was clear, but he wasn't policy-oriented. He wasn't telling you an awful lot about policy. He was basically saying, trust me. And people did. And that's why he won. He also won because he wasn't her.
Well, you know, we had the same discussion yesterday about Jeb Bush. It's that is he. He's a policy wonk.
Right.
Smart guy, gets annoyed by stupid questions, which the press asks him all the time, gets annoyed that he's up against an idiot like Trump, and it shows.
But
what can he do about it?
But so interestingly, this piece in the Times this morning, I believe the poll that's coming out today, shows that very thing. That, you know, I don't know.
Well, we want it both ways. We want a glib personality that we want to be excited about, that turns us on, that has great delivery, and we want someone who has great policies.
But the poll, I'm sorry, Mike, but the poll, well, I remember what the hell I was going to say.
Yeah.
But the poll shows he's the most dangerous. Bush is the most dangerous to Hillary in a general election.
That's right. Because you'll get past all this other stuff. But Mike, your point is really interesting. I think is why
30 seconds. But go ahead.
Okay, that's why Obama got it, because he was kind of cool and distant and above everybody else. But he's a hell of a speaker, so he turned on the crowds. He had both those things.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we got a lot of letters on this. We'll get to those. Plus, we'll move on to other topics as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We welcome your comments. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to our roundtable panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain make up the group. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and we have a lot of them on the candidacy of Hillary Clinton.
Okay. Jenny says, Rosemary is so wrong about Hillary. Hillary is just a good old boy with a skirt on. She's too supportive of corporate America and has been silent about its role in the loss of our middle class. Her views on education, the common core, are not in tune with the rest of the country. She's a rich woman, is out of touch with regular Americans. Women don't dislike her because she's not warm and fuzzy. Women dislike her because they don't like her views, ideas, or policies, and we had no choices before, says Jenny. And Walker, who is a woman, says, this is not about misogyny for many women. It's about private machinations, paranoia, entitlement, and vengeance of Clinton land and the cabal that protects them. Women tend to judge other women by looking for authenticity as well as intelligence. This is the problem. No matter who is working on her campaign, she's being looked at more in more ways than competence. And Bonnie says, panel, if I vote for Hillary, I'm labeled a feminist. Vote for Bernie, I'll be branded a socialist. A vote for Donald makes me outright certifiable. Got anyone I can vote for that confirms that I'm a mere concerned citizen of planet Earth? From Bonnie. Jim says, hi all, I was a supporter of Hillary in 2008 Hey, folks, you write them, I read them. I'm sure what it meant is I was a supporter of Hillary in 2000, not into 2008, but I believe she has lost her credibility because I feel she has no qualms about lying to Congress like her husband and to the American people. I feel this is not the type of person we want as president. And Patrick says, the GOP will keep attacking Hillary, who they still fear most as the ultimate Democratic candidate, because despite current polls, she would garner a large majority of the women's vote, which is a recipe for winning. Just ask Barack. The GOP will gladly parole Sanders as a crazy old guy. And Eric says, and I want to answer Eric on this, there are many more serious issues at hand, I guess, than what we're talking about right now. My $500 donation per year has become undeniably a waste. Good luck. So, Eric, in all honesty, and I hope that you're just unhappy right now, but we desperately need your dollars, and you're desperately still listening to this radio station, that's for sure. So I do hope that you'll consider, you know, what you're saying. We're talking about the leadership of this country, the future of this country. And let me tell you, the leader sets the tone. So I don't think that there are many more things that are more serious than what we're talking about this morning. Feel free to call me anytime on this. We can have a good, honest discussion. And then Robert says, in World War II, the Allies desperately needed the Soviet Union to keep the Nazis bogged down in the Eastern Front, even though they fully expected to have to fight the Soviets once the war was won. Today, it looks like Russia is the only advanced nation willing to directly take on ISIS in Syria, albeit while propping up Syria's awful regime. And so on. And
that's Russia has increased mightily its military presence in Syria. They're saying, oh, we're fighting terrorists. But what they're also doing is putting a lot of troops and equipment into the Middle East. This is not a good move.
Well, it's not good. On the other hand, have we sort of set the stage which allows them to do that?
Absolutely.
We've talked
hindsight's about always 20/20.
Ted says, this is America run by men. You think our political parties were worried about a smart black man becoming president? They are not looking forward to a smart white woman becoming president. It will be more difficult to come out and say, whatever she wants, we are going to vote against it. William says, Rosemary, I don't understand why you support Hillary. You seem like every progressive individual based on what I've heard you say on this show. Can you guys pull up a list of the different donors for Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and compare them? To me, that says it all. Hillary equals more corporate interest and money in Congress, while Bernie is trying to take an approach of redemocratizing our great nation for the benefit of all people. Please stop encouraging the listeners to vote. Hillary, Bernie is our only hope. Well, I take some exception to that. I mean, I have announced what I'm going to do and that I'm going to vote for Bernie. So it isn't as if one person on a panel, in a panel discussion, which we all talk to each other, is defining what this group or this station says. Leslie says, Hillary's problem is the same as Bush's, more of the same. She's also very vulnerable as more people start to believe Bernie can beat the Republicans. Inevitably was her greatest strength. That is slipping. Furthermore, the other day she struck a hawkish note, which has me very concerned. That's from Leslie. And Kevin says, from the discussion this morning, sounds like Rosemary would like to remake Hillary's image into one she thinks is palatable to the American people. Could it be that Hillary just doesn't have what it takes to make the American people
love
her?
Or maybe she doesn't. She just has a bad image. She's a smart,
experienced, talented
woman.
One thing it does prove is that negative advertising and negative campaigning by the people who don't want Hillary has taken hold.
Oh, my God. It's just scary. Yeah.
Well, and then Heidi says, I'd like to have a female president, but Hillary doesn't work for me. She's too old boys club for me. Okay. And Cody says, oh, yeah, we already read Cody's. And Joel says, I know the roundtable's opinion on Bill O'Reilly, but I was not a fan of Hillary Clinton until his interview with her. She answered every question straightforward, seemed honest and likable. I wish she would spend more time talking to the media and getting her opinions and ideas out there.
Yes.
Thanks. Great show, as always, says Joel. And Howard says, when asked about the emails being deleted or wiped from the hard drive, Hillary responded, what do you mean wiped with a cloth? That doesn't sound presidential. Shades of what the definition of is. I think the roundtable panel should moderate the next debate. Great job. And that's from Howard. Brendan says, Rosemary, always happy to hear what you have to say, but I disagree. Every new poll that comes out shows Hillary sliding, and the Hillary supporters keep insisting it's not a big deal. If 30 points among women isn't a big deal, what is? And Scott says, dear friends, Hillary Clinton would be a terrific president from a policy perspective, but she seems to fall short in terms of connecting with voters on an emotional level. Is this a function of sexism? Probably to an extent, but voters do respond to who would you like to have a beer with test. Joe Biden, Marco Rubio, Chris Christie, Donald Trump are ahead of her on that front. I am not advocating the beer test, just an observation. That's from Scott in Pittsfield. Well, then, what are you advocating? Julius.
Yeah, I actually would like us to forget the nice guy thing. I mean, Barack Obama's not someone fun either, and he's had his problems.
That's an excellent point. Do you want somebody who you like in there, or do you want somebody who can get the job done?
Right.
And sometimes the two are not the same.
Exactly.
Yes, but not in this
Ronald
country.
Reagan.
Yeah.
Would say Andrew Cuomo. Not a nice guy, but he's done some amazing. He's gotten through a lot.
Ronald
of
Reagan, a really nice guy, and ..
Yes, good point.
Well, we'll talk about Andrew some other time.
We talk about him every time.
Not really.
Yes, we do. We've managed to get him in all the time.
Not really. Julius says, I had a friend named Michael, and when he wanted to talk down to people, he got sort of his nose would get sort of parse. And he would say, not really. Julia says, I was initially in favor of Hillary and thought she might be a shoo-in. However, her handling of the emails issue, which should have been quickly disposed with a mea culpa, does not, to me, demonstrate the leadership qualities of a potential POTUS.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Why do we need a shoo-in? Why does it have to be someone who, maybe it's better. I think it is better that she has to fight. Wasn't that the argument at one point? Other Democrats should run so that she's honed, so that she...
One did, and look what's happened.
I know.
Right,
so
but it's forcing her to get...
Yeah. And that's not a bad thing.
No, it isn't. It isn't.
David checks in on the Syria-Russian issue.
Good.
And says, at one time, Syria was a great vacation spot, and Russian could be heard everywhere in Syria.
Right.
Also, remember, just because someone has a doctorate in ophthalmology like Assad trained in Britain does not mean they are very ethical.
Yeah, he's a monster. I think he's a
monster. All right. I guess Judy says she's glad that I'm back, and I'm delighted she's sticking with us no matter what. And Libby says something. Libby said something.
She won't go to Liberty University?
Have fun.
That's just a personal note.
Yeah,
that's
I see. Well, yes. Okay. Very good. Very good. And that, I think, is it.
All right. We are good. So
personal note. Don't wipe it off, Alan. You won't be able to run for president.
Okay, cheap shot. And Jorley says, I would love a beer or two with the Bush brothers, but I would never vote for them.
Well, that's the beer test, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of beer?
Oh, what? Looking into that. Let's take a break. We'll be back, and then we'll finish up with many other topics. We'll be right back after this.
Support comes from Kingsway Community Schenectady, New York, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including independent living apartments, home care, and more. KingswayCommunity.com. Binghamton University, committed to providing a transformative learning community dedicated to preparing students for careers and advanced education. Binghamton.edu. And Schenectady County Historical Society, presenting the 55th Annual Stockade Walkabout, celebrating 3 centuries of Schenectady history and architecture, featuring tours of the insides of historic homes, churches, and spaces in the Stockade neighborhood. Saturday, September 26th, 11 to 5, schenectadyhistorical.org.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us go back to the topics and talk about what is happening in this wide world of ours. And we'll go. This is a story from over the weekend, and I think it's an interesting one, and this is the California legislature approving assisted suicide. In a landmark victory for supporters of assisted suicide, the California state legislature on Friday gave its final approval to a bill that would allow doctors to help terminally ill people and their wives. 4 states, Oregon, Washington, Montana, and Vermont, already allow physicians to prescribe life-ending medication to some patients. The California bill, which passed Friday in the state Senate by a vote of 23-14, will now go to Governor Brown, who will roughly triple access to doctor-assisted suicide across the country if he signs it. Mr. Brown has given a little indication of his intentions.
Yeah. I have one thing to say, and only one word. Hooray!
Yeah, this is a really important debate, and whether how we decide it doesn't matter so much as that we're talking about it.
Right.
For the first time, how do you end life? It involves everything we most care about in this country, you know, life and dignity and fairness. It's an amazingly important discussion.
The movement is called Death with Dignity.
Right.
And so there are people who are both for and against that, of
right.
course. But that idea of dying with dignity is, I think, fascinating, and obviously something that I think most people say, yes, you want to be a part of, but you want it to be on your terms.
You know, it's interesting to me that abortion is the end of the cycle, the beginning of the cycle that we always talk about. And you could actually eliminate abortion if you had other policies like conception. You know, if you had family planning, you could really eliminate abortion. There's no way really to eliminate this whole death thing. We're all going to die.
No, you're right about that. There's no way to eliminate. Everyone's going to die. We know that so far.
And so this part of the debate, I was just going to say, Mike, and please speak on it then, is that this part of the debate seems much more interesting and important to me.
It affects everybody. Now, there's a bill in the New York State Legislature brought by Democrats, and it couldn't get anywhere in the state Senate, so it didn't even come up for hearings. It hasn't come up for discussion. But a lot of people say that it now will get enhanced by the increase. If the governor of California, Jerry Brown, does sign it, that is regarded as a big push forward for this movement across the country. Of course, many are against it. Not the least of which is the Catholic Church. You know, when we wrote an editorial saying there ought to be discussion, it ought to come up for discussion in New York. The Bishop Edward Scharfenberger wrote a piece for the Times Union where he said there is death with dignity through palliative care, and people can still die with dignity without enhancing it by taking drugs that will end their life, which is the way that death with dignity does work. You're provided with medication in the final stages of your life. You have to go through counseling to make sure that you're of sound mind. You already have to have essentially a terminal illness near the final stages. And so we'll get a lot more you know, we'll know a lot more about it. We'll have higher literacy in this as this gets debated.
All I know is that when I'm lying there and it's my turn to go, I'd like it to be on my terms.
Yes.
We do that with our pets. We don't know really what their terms are, but they can't walk and they can't. We hold them up, and we've done this. The Shartoks have done this. We hold them in our arms. They are injected with something and they're gone. It is something that I have always believed in, and I don't, you know, I'm with the libertarians on this. Why in the world would anybody tell me I can't?
Well, I think there's a fear, pardon me, Joe, there's a fear, though, that it will become a duty. I'm older now, and my kids don't want to spend my estate taking care of me and watch me suffer, so therefore I have my duty to step aside and take my own.
You know, I have my issues with the Catholic Church, but this is not one of them. I think the Church has consistently argued in favor of life. That means they're anti-abortion, they're anti-execution, and they're anti-suicide at death. And that is a completely supportable philosophy, and it's worth listening to. But I also think we're in the middle of a movement, not unlike smoking marijuana, not unlike gay marriage, where the societal views are very much changing, and we're going to see this move.
Well, what about you, Rosemary? How do you feel?
Oh, I absolutely want to be able to call the shots at the end. I understand the points of the bishop, and I have to say I really admired that last pope who suffered so publicly. You know, he could hardly hold his head up.
And Pope John Paul II.
Right. He was a model of dying, suffering, and accepting what comes to you. I really admire that. On the other hand, I don't want to do that. I don't want to burden my family. I don't want to suffer and pain and try to hang on to life at great cost when it will never get better.
Well, that's a very interesting point in response to what Michael said. And that is some people just don't want somebody to crash out because they're worried about their family.
Being
but
a burden.
Why is it an illegitimate concept, if you think about it, to say, okay, by the way, I'm not doing that. Right? When I want to go, it's because I'm in pain. It's not because I want to save whatever little bit of money I have, you know, for the kids. But I do think it's a legitimate thing to think about.
And on the other hand, you know, my father did not ever believe he was going to die. He wanted them to try everything, no matter how far out it was. And we felt responsible to do that. He had that right. And what you're saying and what the church is rightly pointing out is that won't be the case in every family.
Just two comments. One, to what you just said about how the societal shift of whether it be marijuana or gay marriage, that the public view is different on this. I disagree with you slightly on that because I think the public on this, I don't think people want to talk about death. I think people are just completely find it just revolting to talk about that concept of death. So whether it's your death or someone else's death, people don't want to talk about it. So I think that's really difficult, and why we're only seeing it in four states, and it doesn't have the movement. I mean, the first law that was passed in Oregon was 1997. I mean, that's almost 20 years ago. So we haven't taken great strides on this issue in the past two decades.
So why are they so smart in Oregon?
Well, I mean, the other thing I think about it too is that it does not yet. It does come to a point where you have to. Where I believe in the debate, you say to yourself, because Mike was talking about the church's view, which is certainly the church's view, but you look at it and say, what's the other side? What's the other option? Well, the other option is that we can put you on what we call comfort care.
Right. Hospice or palliative care.
So what do we do? So I remember having fighting with three medical ethicists, a priest, and two nurses as to, okay, but what does that mean? And finally, this was the question that I asked where I finally got the answer. Doctor, how long is the longest you have ever seen a patient survive on comfort care? 5 days. Okay. Now I know what we're talking about.
So it's a euphemism for allowing someone to die.
Although,
peacefully.
Right. So we're talking about 5 days. So my question is, well, why do we have to go through the 5 days if we can put that person out of their suffering and we can also, which is my, that's my opinion. But
sure,
but also the options aren't great either.
No.
And the ultimate option of, hey, you're going to die anyway, that ain't great either.
Let's all go back and read our Freud one more time. In which he talks about, you know, fear of death as being one of the, as opposed to Eros, love, being one of the most motivating things that any of us, you know, face in our lives. Look, this is a terribly difficult subject. We know a woman who just lost her mom, and we felt very badly for her. But the mom said, okay, I'm taking this into my own hands. I'm not going to eat.
Yes.
I am not going to eat.
Some people do.
And she stopped eating, and she stuck to it.
It's a hard way to die, though.
Well,
it's
there could
way.
Be
Why
easier
Why do we have
ways.
To do yeah. that? Yeah, yeah. And, of course, as soon as you bring up money, then we get into all kinds of other issues. But it is related. The cost of keeping people alive when their health situation is hopeless is enormously expensive.
Right. The most money gets spent in the last 6 months of someone's life, you know, Medicaid money and Medicare money. And the fear is that should... death with dignity, which is what some opponents like to call assisted suicide, that it will become, there'll be pressure on people from society saying, you know, you can stick around a couple more months, but it's just going to cost all of us. It's going to make our premiums rise, and it's your duty for society to just cash it in right now. And that's a frightful thought if that's the case, because a lot of people have extraordinarily touching and meaningful relationships in the last few weeks of their life, and they should not be disregarded those kinds of things. It's a very, very personal kind of thing.
That's all true, and yet on the other hand, isn't it our societal responsibility?
Is it to just jump
to
out early so it doesn't cost everybody the medical costs?
No, well,
there have been cultures who have done that. So, I really want to hear all of this. I want
you're right.
This.
I completely agree. I think it needs to be debated. We need to confront it. And it's a difficult topic, and we shouldn't keep the bill out of committee so it doesn't have hearings in the state Senate. It should be discussed.
And there's still so many gray areas on it, and anyone who's been through the system certainly knows it. And it's you can have a million directives, you can have your fill out all your forms, you can go to lawyer after lawyer, and all of that goes out the window if they turn around to the patient and say, you know, do you want us to help you? And they say yes, whatever my state of mind. They're in.
That's right.
So we have a couple letters.
We do. And I haven't talked to my wonderful producer, Jessica, about what we're doing today at 2 o'clock for the Vox Pop, which we always have on Tuesdays. But I think this has been such an interesting subject that we'll do one of these, you know, two today. Okay. So Jennifer says, greetings. The problem with Hillary isn't her personality or campaigning style. It's her name and her policies. Many of us don't believe in political dynasties or dynasties, if you happen to live in Great Britain, nor are we interested in more of the same policies. Even if her name wasn't Clinton, she's a status quo candidate in bed with the banks and in the old establishment, and her actions while in office and her current policies reflect that. I'm feeling the burn, says Jennifer. And Laura says, I'm voting for Hillary no matter what. Okay. Suzanne Allen says, which candidates would you rather have a beer with? How chauvinist. I, for one, would rather have a beer with Hillary. And Robert says, Rosemary said Assad is a monster. Agreed. And so are the president of Sudan, half a dozen other sub-Saharan African leaders. But sometimes you need a monster to fight a monster, especially if, like now, the good guys aren't willing to fully commit to the struggle.
Yep. Can't disagree.
Michael says, don't you think that Middle Eastern countries should be taking the majority of refugees? And that's from Michael. And Ted's, I didn't understand it. And Stephen makes the point, even though my co-panelists may think this is troublesome, that Jesus was not a Jew. He was a Christian, says Stephen.
He was actually both. Okay, he's born a Jew. He became, like, basically the first Christian, so.
I see.
Right?
I guess you could say that. It'd be interesting to hear.
Why do you bring these topics up at like 12 seconds left? Like, let's talk about the history of religion.
Yes, the history of religion and immigration in the Middle East. Right?
I've always felt that.
And how are we going to die?
Yeah, I've always felt the question is, when you ask, if you were able to ask him, what were you? What would he say?
I'm the Son of God.
And on that note, we thank you all very much.
Did Mark Spain say he was the Son of God?
Oh, no, I was saying what? It was a biblical quote.
We're gone. Thank you.